questions.
Good evening. I see various new faces tonight, so welcome. We're exploring in a series of Wednesday night talks the Bodhisattva precepts. This is the conduct or way of life of a bodhisattva, a person dedicating their life to awakening for the benefit of all beings and with all beings and for the great happiness and joy and peace that is awakening in Buddha's way. And the Buddha and the Buddha's ancestors have laid out this path of bodhisattva precepts for us, specific practices for us to contemplate and consider taking up and living. So in our particular school of Soto Zen, we have what's called the 16 bodhisattva precepts. So last week we talked about the first three, which are the three refuges. Going for refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Refuge being the place of complete security and ease. A place of safety and sanctuary is what refuge means. And what Saranam means. And one version of that that was spoken of last week was refuge in the inconceivable complete awakening of the Buddhas is going for refuge in Buddha. And then going for refuge in Dharma is finding a place of security in the freedom from dust of Buddha, which is the way that none of our ideas reaches this inconceivable awakening. And then refuge in Sangha, which is the virtue of harmony in the world, all things being in harmony in a way that's beyond the way we usually think of harmony, that everything is included in this harmony. So this is one version of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha that we take refuge in. Also called the mind of Zazen, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And that's the basis, you know, if we really give ourselves fully to that refuge, all these other bodhisattva precepts are automatically embodied and upheld. But in case we have trouble fully taking refuge in Buddha or understanding exactly what that means, the Buddhas and Dogen and our ancestors laid out this path of describing these other precepts that basically are describing this refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, this entering the mind of Zazen. So, of the 16 bodhisattva precepts, the first three are refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and the next three that we'll bring up tonight are embracing and sustaining standards of conduct, you could say, embracing and sustaining wholesome qualities, good dharmas, and embracing and sustaining living beings. And I brought this up a few weeks ago, but there weren't many people here, so I'll bring it up again in maybe a different way for those who were here. The source of these three, they're called the three collective pure bodhisattva precepts. And their source is in some somewhat obscure Mahayana sutras, but most well known to us in English translation in the great treatise on the bodhisattva stages by Asanga, who is an Indian wonderful Mahayana writer, teacher, and practitioner. Sometimes said to be the founder of what we call the mind-only school, and the brother of Vasubandhu. For those who know some of these Indian teachers, Asanga was one of the really great, very important Mahayana ancestral teachers. And he expounds on these threefold pure bodhisattva precepts extensively in this treatise on the bodhisattva stages. And they're defined like this: embracing and sustaining standards of conduct, or in the old Indian way, they might say, embracing and sustaining the pratimoksha, or the vinaya, or discipline of the Buddhas. And this often refers to monastic guidelines. I think standards of conduct is a nice way to put it, because it's unlike the other two pure precepts. This one is like, there are these standards, there are these time-honored standards of practical ways to live in the world. And it's, you know, there's a lot of them for monastic bodhisattvas, but Asanga makes it clear that there's a lay bodhisattva path, which is an essential element of the Mahayana, the great vehicle in Indian Buddhism that got passed along to us in the Zen tradition. Lay and monastic bodhisattvas, it's not so much the issue of what form one's life takes, but that one is, in this case, embracing and sustaining the standards of conduct for one's particular life role. So this is the one that's this precept is about renunciation, you could say, and it's often associated with, and there's commentaries that make it clear that this can also be equated with this old way of putting the practice as refrain from all evil. So embracing and sustaining standards of conduct is equated with refraining or avoiding all evil or all harm. And embracing and sustaining wholesome dharmas is equated with do all good. And embracing and sustaining living beings is equated with purify the mind. As in the early teachings, very, very early, maybe some of the earliest teachings ever of the Buddha said, kind of summing up the whole path of practice, avoid all evil, refrain from all evil or harmful action, do all good, purify the mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. So this threefold pure precept collection is connected very closely and equated even with these three early teachings of refraining from evil, doing good, and purifying the mind. So again, the refraining from evil or embracing and sustaining standards of conduct is like renunciation, and it's like the hundreds of monastic precepts for people living that kind of life, and for lay bodhisattvas have their own standards of conduct. And this is just, you know, the ways we live in the world in terms of particularly what we're refraining from doing in terms of harm. So one version of what these are the 10 bodhisattva precepts that later get expounded that we'll get into in future weeks. They're usually put in the negative, like not killing and not stealing and so on. So it's kind of a restraint or refraining. But I think quite wonderfully it's worded in this Mahayana way as not a negative, avoiding all evil, but it's, in our tradition, it's worded as embracing and sustaining, gathering together, upholding positively these standards of conduct. And we could also say in the Zen tradition, when they talk about this, they kind of pare it down to the essentials, and they don't, in the Zen tradition, is not so into delineating all these monastic precepts. They're there, but the great Zen ancestors often said things like renounce fame and profit. Those are the two that they often pick up on. And this is the essence of the monastic precepts, and maybe lay precepts in a different way. Because maybe lay people living in the world have to make some profit, right? We have a business and we're earning something. But the seeking for more profit than we need, or trying to take advantage of some situation to gain more profit, and fame or reputation, again, manipulating situations to increase our good reputation, are summing up the whole thing. It's just like, and the Buddha Zen ancestors are saying, just forget about that, just let it go, just fame will come to you and profit will come to you, or not. But in either case, don't seek it, don't try to acquire it. Because these are the, and not because it's bad per se, but just because it's a source of suffering to seek what we don't have. And refraining from harming others. So often those, seeking fame and profit, we end up harming others along the way. Often it seems to be the case. So in the Bodhisattva precept, the emphasis is on not harming others. So refraining from harming others through our own self-centered activities. This weekend I was at this event, somebody gave me this sticker. This is a sticker on the first pure precept. It's a, it says harm with a slash mark through it.
Was this a Buddhist event or?
It was, but it was a Buddhist event. But the person who gave it to me, it says, www.donoharm.us. So, and I think it was not connected with. He was at this Buddhist event, but. He just has this organization called Do No Harm, and basically what they do is just give out these stickers. for people to put on their cars or wherever, just to remind us all to do no harm. And I don't even know if they get into, you know, what exactly doing no harm is. I briefly looked at their website. It didn't seem to specify exactly what. It's just like, it just says harm's a big problem, and let's, and we, it's so easy to forget and cause harm, so let's remind each other. And they have all different styles of stickers, and they're all free. So if you go to Do No Harm, you can order, he said he would send me, you know, a package of like 1,000 or something. So if anyone wants one, you can go to that website, or maybe I'll get a package. But I thought, and if anyone else wants to start an organization on like the second trophy set, because he was maybe neglecting the other two. Although they do have these bumper stickers that say, you know, practice random acts of kindness. And what is it? And something else like that.
Senseless beauty, something.
Yeah, acts of senseless beauty and random acts of kindness, something like that. That kind of sounds like the second pure precept. So maybe what we really don't have is the, is a bumper sticker for the third pure precept of embracing and sustaining living beings. Maybe there is one, but anyway, this is the beginning, though. Just refrain from all evil, no harm. And Dogen Zenji usually presents these precepts as this positive thing of embracing and sustaining these standards of conduct or deportment and manners, you could even say, or discipline and conduct. Literally, there's the Chinese character for vinaya. Vinaya means something like discipline. And I think it's quite interesting that, that the Buddha, in his own time, instead of calling his religion Buddhism, right? But he wanted to have a name for his tradition, even while he was alive. So he said, he called it his Dharma and Vinaya, or, you know, Dharma slash Vinaya. And so he would say to people, in this Dharma Vinaya, we say, you know, do all good. Or we say, practice meditation like this. You know, referring to, you know, his unique way of practice. That's how he defined it. The Dharma slash Vinaya, which would mean like the truth and the discipline or conduct that goes with the truth. So we often say the Dharma or the Buddha Dharma, and this is the emphasis we usually bring up, is the teachings of truth, the teachings for liberation. But it's not just the truth, it's the life that goes with it, it's the conduct that's in accord with the truth, is you could say the Vinaya part. Which is a, you know, just that part is a wonderful contemplation in itself, I think. The name of Buddhism according to Buddha. And, so then even though Dogen said embrace and sustain vinaya, deportment, or, standards of conduct, he also wrote this essay called Refrain from All Evil, referring to this earlier, way of talking about the teaching of refrain from all evil, do all good, purify the mind, in which he actually tells this story too of this this Zen teacher called Bird's Nest, Zen Master Dorin of the Bird's Nest, and I think he was called this because he lived up in a tree. And it doesn't say this here, but I'm recalling the story. Maybe someone might remember this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the story is something like, he talks about this statesman and poet of Tang Dynasty, China, who was the student of this Bird's Nest teacher. And the, one time he was stood below his tree and called up to him and said, it looks very precarious and dangerous up there. and birds nested down to him. Looks very precarious and dangerous down there. Because that's how this life is, right? It's very precarious, and it's dangerous to actually go about in the world outside of trees, because it's so easy to get into evil and harm and to forget about doing good. So maybe that's why that this teacher just said, well, to avoid doing evil, I'll just stay up in this tree. And one time the statesman came and said, what's the great meaning of Buddhism? They're always asking this in Zen stories. What is the great meaning of the Buddha Dharma? What's the great meaning of the Dharma Vinaya? What's the great meaning of the Buddha way? And this teacher said, refrain from all evil, do all good, quoting the ancient Buddha's words. And the statesman said, even if this is so, though this is so, even a 3-year-old child can say that. You know, like, who hasn't heard that? A 3-year-old child can say that. And the teacher said, a 3-year-old child may be able to say it, but an 80-year-old man cannot practice it. And the statesman bowed in thanks. And Dogen comments on this story, but that's basically the story. And Dogen comments in his usual, unusual way of basically like praising the perfect wisdom of 3-year-old children. We have a very little child here today who's silently expounding Dharma and refraining from all evil very nicely so far. So in this essay, it's basically Dogen's commenting on avoid all evil in the Zen tradition. And he says various things like, since the family of Buddhas arises from conditions, thus conditions arise from the family of Buddhas. It's not that evils do not exist, it's just that they are not done, or they are avoided. In Italy, it's like, the title of this essay is, in Japanese, Shouaku Makusa, which means all evil not doing. So, you know, in Chinese, it sounds like that. All evil don't do, not do. But in the Chinese language, you could read it as all evil don't do, or all evil not done. And of course, Dogen goes wild with that possibility. So it's not that evils do not exist, it's just that they're not done. It's not that evils exist, just that they are not done. Evils are not empty, they are not done. Evils are not forms, they are not done. Evils are not not done, they are just not done. So this is, you know, in Zen we say non-doing. We talked about some in this Bendoa class. Zazen, the Zazen of non-doing, non-action, like Wu Wei is one way of saying not doing, which doesn't literally mean like you don't do anything, but it's in the spirit of you don't do anything. Or in this case, that evils are not done, they're not created by themselves. So if we don't do them, if we don't do harm, it doesn't inherently exist. Harm is not like some, you know, I think there are religious debates about this. Is there truly evil in the world? And according to this, it's no, it's not that there's this inherent evil in the world. It's just if it's done, then evil arises. So the practice is not doing evil. which might sound at first like trying to refrain from causing harm, but in this Zen way, it's more like understanding that evil is not done, or it's not created, it's not made, and therefore we don't make it. So evil is not done, which is, as all these precepts, as we get into them, they have different levels of understanding, and the Zen tradition emphasizes this kind of ultimate level, that actually, by understanding that evil is not done, and doesn't actually really arise in any substantial way, except by the creation of our own mind. So by understanding this, then we actually live in the conventional world in such a way that evil is refrained from. This might be hard to follow, but this is the logic that will be woven through all these bodhisattva precepts. There's a conventional practice of just stop, just refrain from harm. When you're about to, you have an urge to yell at somebody, just refrain from that urge. Refrain from harm. And then there's this deeper level of actually, again, going back to Zazen mind, the Zazen mind that actually sees that evil is not a real, substantial force in the world. It's just a moment-to-moment arising, dependent on our mind, basically. So if our mind doesn't make evil, evil is not made. Evil is not done. If our mind doesn't do evil, evil is not done. And so the Zen approach is to actually understand that in that stillness, that mind of stillness, that mind that's dropping off moment to moment in Zazen, that evil is not done. And therefore, realizing that, we don't cause harm in the world. And likewise, with doing good, there's no inherent good. Good is created in a moment-to-moment way. Although there is good in the nature of goodness, there has never been good that has become manifest beforehand to await the agent. At precisely such a time of doing good, there is no good that does not come. Although all that's good is formless, accounting in doing good is faster than a magnet attracting iron. That power is stronger than a gale. Even the earth, mountains, rivers, the world, the country, the dominant power of action cannot obstruct the accounting of good, or the doing of good. When the conditions for good are present, nothing can obstruct the arising of good. And purify the mind would be another way of saying understanding that evil is not done and good arises. In a moment-to-moment, completely present kind of way, and then it's all different again. And so embracing and sustaining wholesome dharmas includes things like generosity and patience and enthusiastic diligence and meditation practice itself, and so on, these wonderful virtues of bodhisattvas, and embracing and sustaining living beings is particularly directed towards helping the sick and needy and poor and ultimately liberating all beings from suffering. This is the fundamental bodhisattva vow, is we're practicing for the benefit of others. Which might mean that we're very focused inwardly on our own practice, but we're always remembering the context is this is all for others, for the entire world. Abundantly benefiting living beings in whatever way we can. As we chant the Bodhisattva vows at the end of the talk, like that, embracing and sustaining living beings. So we have a little time for discussion if people have questions or comments on these threefold pure Bodhisattva precepts or anything else. Yes.
So, well, let me try and reformulate and see if I'm anywhere near understanding. There is no inherent evil or good because those are concepts. And so the terms apply only to actions in the moment. But even those actions in the moment produce consequences which we can't foresee. So is it a matter of intention then?
It's intention and good intentions. The best intentions, I would say that Dogen Zenji is proposing that if we understand how evil is not truly created in any substantial way, that we can't actually make evil, that actually if we understand that, that creates a very positive intention to, in the conventional world, refrain from harm. Maybe not even refrain from harm, but more like there's no more motivation for harm in that way. Because motivation for harm comes from belief in substantiality, it looks like.
Understand it not just in an abstract way, but here, you know? So I'm not sure what my question is, but I'm wondering, I mean, so far what it seems like you're saying, that something that I could just think of trying, would be to be paying attention to the impact of my behavior in the realm of harm and no harm. And maybe to explore and inquire into that, to become aware of that dimension.
Yeah.
Going through my choices that I make in my life.
Yeah. So even though there are these, you know, wonderfully exalted ultimate meanings of these precepts, that doesn't discount the very down-to-earth practical conventional meanings, which are really the starting point and also the test of the ultimate meaning. So if we think like, yeah, there actually is no evil, it's all not done, it's never been done, and therefore I might as well go just like, you know, take something that's not given or whatever. But no, they're aligned always. And in fact, I was thinking about the other day how in the Rinzai Zen koan system, where there's this systematically passing through hundreds of koan stories and with a teacher and dialogue and giving a specific correct answer through these large collections of koans, the culmination after many, many years of the standard collections of hundreds of koans, the kind of capping final culmination is the Bodhisattva precepts, particularly the 10 Bodhisattva precepts we'll later get to. Those are the most profound koans in the Rinzai Zen system at the end. And I would see it like this, is that, not having gone through this, but I think the reason why they're so profound is understanding this ultimate meaning of that life is not killed, for example, or all evil is not done. And yet, the test is like in the day-to-day life. It's like it's not some abstract ultimate that doesn't matter than what the conventional world is, you know, how we're living in that world, this world. But is, how is it completely integrated? So, you know, we talk in this, in Zen, bringing up this ultimate level for inspiration's sake. But maybe mainly the thing to focus on is how are we living in the details of our life, in the conduct of, are we seeking fame and profit? And also another one of the main, if you look at these monastic precepts, a lot of them seem to be focused on basically distraction. Like how are, you know, the distraction that doesn't necessarily harm anybody else, but just how are we spending our time in this short, sweet life, in terms of, we have this wonderful gift of being able to be present and free, and how are we turning towards just, you know, wasting our time basically with distraction. It is very challenging if we really are diligent about this, right? Very challenging. But I think that would fall into the refraining from, evil's a big word, but you know, embracing and sustaining standards of conduct.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you just said, that really started to open it up for me, that when you said, you know, how do I want to spend this precious life and that this opportunity that we have to actually be present with each other?
Yeah.
That starts feeling to me a bit like, and maybe I'm off here, what you're referring to as the absolute. Is that? I mean, because, like, to just think of it as do all good, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, how? You know? I mean, I'm trying, but how do I know if I'm doing good, you know? And yet, on the other hand, if you get too focused on the rules and the pickiness of it, it gets impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've heard people go on and on, like, you know, if you try to not kill, you can't not kill. In our life, we're killing bugs and microbes, you know, and vegetables. And so, you know, it can get really hard to know, well, how then do you work with this? But there's something about that thought that feels very liberating and very sobering in terms of something that could actually be like a big, deep question that would true me up and actually not to be a good girl and follow the rules, but, oh my God. You know,
this is your life.
This is my only life.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're, you know, when you're around death, you know, like, mm-hmm. you go, this is it.
Yeah.
It's going to be over.
Yeah.
And what?
And in a way, our life is the minutiae, too, you know. So it's not so much that we could get distracted, actually, by the minutiae, trying to figure out what to do all the time and get totally neurotic about that. But we could also, just pay attention to everything we're doing with an open, not knowing kind of mind, and proceed through our day with just, I don't know what the appropriate response is each moment, and yet I'm alive, so I have to respond. And but I'm watching where I'm coming from, basically. You know, where I'm coming from seems the main thing, and how it's affecting others. Yeah. And that's the spirit of the Bodhisattva precepts in general, is not so much like just follow a list of rules. You know, in Asanga, even this old Indian teacher Asanga brings up all these amazing examples of how, like, you know, defying conventional morality could be the case for a Bodhisattva, because it's not it's not like they have to just follow some particular rule. It's more like what's benefiting beings. It's always that context for a bodhisattva. So with not knowing mind, we don't know what's really helpful. But we're watching carefully.
It's like that's your North Star. You know, you may not know exactly what it is, but if you're looking for that North Star, then at least there's some, you know.
That's a good way to put it. The North Star for the bodhisattva is, benefiting beings, or what seems to be benefiting, and not just benefiting, but the highest benefit of liberating beings from suffering, which means liberating them from the belief that evil truly exists, for example. That's what really believing anything substantially exists is the basic root of suffering in the Buddha Dharma. But how we can't just say, oh, evil doesn't exist. Are you okay now? this doesn't work either. So we don't know, but we just remember the North Star. So that's a little bit on the three pure bodhisattva precepts for this week. And, obviously we could go on with any one of these precepts for years. But next we can start going through the 10 great bodhisattva precepts. So thank you for coming tonight. And I think, let's see, we have for maybe those who are just checking it out and maybe won't be coming regularly, please note that I'm feeling the inspiration myself that we have this practice period coming up with the calendars starts to get really packed in a couple of weeks, and we have all kinds of events and ceremonies and extended retreats and things like that. So everyone is most welcome to come join any part of the Santa Cruz Zen Center's many events through the winter. We dedicate the merit of this gathering to the refraining of all evil and the devotedly doing of all good and the complete liberation of all beings. Beings are numberless. I love to say them. Yes.